Our next speaker of the session is Tom DeFranco from Cal Baptist University.
All right, thank you, Steve. Steve said, my name is Tom Furco. I'm a chemistry professor at California Baptist University, which is in Riverside, just north of here, about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on what traffic's like. So this is a part of also the local Southern California chapter of the ASA, and also we have a campus chapter. And I've been part of the ASA since, I think, 2009, but I've not spoken at the annual meetings before. This year I'm on the chairing the program committee, so I figure if I put in an abstract, I probably wouldn't get turned down. So here I am, but I also chose to put myself in the smallest room near the end. So here we are. Glad more than five people are here. Thanks for coming. So what I'm going to be talking about today is a project that I have had student researchers working on for the last 3 years or so. It's also a project that I've learned about at what it is called the Biennial Conference on Chemical Education, which is actually held every 2 years, except for with COVID. They skipped a couple years. It's actually happening this exact same weekend as our ASA meeting. So if I wasn't here, I would be there. It's a big chemical education conference. When I learned about this project, it was at Notre Dame University in 2018. And I went just thinking, okay, I need to learn more pedagogy. I need to learn, see what's happening with the latest developments in teaching chemistry. And they had an aside of this project that Notre Dame was overseeing called the Distributed Pharmaceutical Analysis Laboratory. And they asked anybody who's interested to, it was a set aside time. So I went to that meeting and I got involved. And I'm going to report a little bit about what my students have done, a little bit about the project overall, a little bit about what my students have done, some of the motivation for doing this line of research, and also tied into a biblical perspective as well. So the DPAL project, as we call it, Distributed Pharmaceutical Analysis Laboratory, again, it's administered by Notre Dame University. I don't have a slide up here, a web link, but if you just Google DPAL and Notre Dame University, and you'll find they'll be the first thing that pops up. The professor who runs it, her name is Maria Lieberman. And also it's a collaboration with a group called Chemists Without Borders. And what the goal of this is to provide high quality, validated chemical analysis of pharmaceutical samples from partners in the developing world. So what they do is they have people from Notre Dame go to areas around the world that don't have rigorous testing of pharmaceuticals that are being sold to the public. So unlike the United States, where we have the FDA, we have other government regulatory agencies in most of the world, and also we have pharmacies you got to go to and get prescriptions. Most of the world, if you have an infection, you go down to the local corner pharmacy and you buy antibiotics from the local pharmacy, and that's what you take, and hopefully you're getting what you think you're buying. If you have, you need to buy any drugs, that's basically how it's done. You don't have to get prescriptions for a lot of different pharmaceutical compounds. Also, depending on the country you go to, sometimes they may be tested or not. Sometimes they may be more reputable than not. So what Notre Dame is doing, they're having people going out and they're buying pharmaceuticals from these street corner pharmacies, bringing back to the United States. And what they do is then they partner with different academic institutions in the U.S. And right now they have, on their website, they have, I think, like 20-some listed, but it's up to 40, 50. With COVID, it really threw this off because some places shut it down. We actually started up during COVID. So somewhere I'd say 30-plus academic institutions, primarily undergraduate universities. And what these universities are doing, they're using their analytical resources, specifically HPLC or high-performance liquid chromatographs, to characterize these suspect medications from developing countries. And again, on the map there, I have them in red. I'm not going to list the countries, but you can kind of figure out what parts of the world, Africa, South Asia, where these countries would be located, where they're getting the drugs from. It's actually four different countries in Africa. They're all connected there on that map. My motivation for doing this is CBU. So a little bit about our university. So first of all, we're a private Christian university in Riverside, just north of here. We have about 11,500 students. So that's undergraduate, graduate, online, all programs together. That was this last fall. We'll probably be few hundred above that. We're a growing university. We have a chemistry program that we started in 2010. It's not a very large program, but we started biochemistry and chemistry majors in 2010, and we have about 20 students total in each of those. So again, the chemistry is small compared to the overall size of the university. Graduate programs, we have a large engineering, large nursing, biology, biomedical sciences is very large. And then we have a new major we started 4 years ago in forensic chemistry. And what I'm always looking for are research projects that these majors can do. Also within the constraints of the equipment we have, time constraints for ourselves and our students. So in terms of research, research is required for our BMB majors. Chemistry majors, it depends. Those who want to go to graduate school, we require research. Those who want to teach, we don't require research. We have a couple of other concentrations, environmental science, things on those lines where they don't need to research, maybe the students will. And then for the forensic chem major, which is our newest major, it's actually, as I mentioned, it's our largest as well. Those students have to do a capstone project, and they have three different options. They can do a thesis, a literature thesis. They can do an internship, which is what we really want them to do. Go out and find a laboratory where they can do a semester-long internship, or they can do an undergraduate research project. And as of now, it's kind of split between those three. So we only had a few majors graduate so far. First graduating class was this May. Had a couple students switch in that graduated already, but the research project I wanted to do was something that all three of these different majors could do. Another thing about CBU is we are a minority-serving institution, and most Christian colleges you don't think of as falling under that. Specifically, we're a Hispanic-serving institution, mainly because we're located in Southern California, Inland Empire, which means that over 25% of our full-time enrollment of undergraduates are Hispanic. So we have a large number of Hispanic students. We also are, like most colleges, you know, predominantly female. And in chemistry, we follow this as well. So our student body and our chemistry majors are majority female, comparable to CBU's overall Hispanic population. And I just looked, the students who I've done research so far. So these are the students who I've mentored in this one project. And I have several other projects, especially for the forensic chem. I've had 10 total students work with me so far, one male, 9 females. And now those females, 4 of them are Hispanic. And the ones who graduated so far, I'll put a little bit about this later, but they've all gotten jobs, graduate school, before they've graduated. So this is helping to prepare them, hopefully, for jobs that they can take on after they have graduated. Another thing about these students is many of them they'll be holding down jobs while they're going to school. They have family obligations. We are not a highly selective university. We're a growing university, and we have, obviously, we have admissions requirements, but it's we're working with a lot of students who are coming to us that with various levels of preparation from high school, and our goal is to get them up to where they're going to be able to have a good education, go out into the workforce or graduate school after they graduate. So also thinking about this project, you know, my motivation behind it was thinking, okay, in chemistry, what do we, what can we do related to faith-related science? So both in theory and application, comparing it to biology and physics. So biology, always off, you have things like creation, evolution, genetics, environmental science, creation, care, physics, you have astronomy, particle physics, quantum physics. And think about chemistry. Well, what do we have in chemistry? I'm a chemistry faculty, I know several of you are as well. Maybe quantum mechanics, that overlaps with physics. Atomic theory, again, overlaps with physics. But purely from the theory side, chemistry is not really the most controversial of sciences. When you think about, there's really not a theistic version of chemistry and a secular version of chemistry. It's chemistry. Application as well, biology. A lot of students go into biology who are Christians looking for a science degree because they're looking at going into medicine. They want to serve people. So other health-related careers, pharmacy, dental, dentistry, things like that, biotechnology for those wanting to do the research, environmental science. So there's a lot pulling the Christian students towards biology-related majors. And this shows at our university, we have probably, I don't know what we have, probably 300-400 students in bio and biomedical sciences, biology, biomedical science, environmental science. So it's probably, over 4 or 5 times as large as our chemistry majors combined. Physics, on the other hand, you have things like engineering, which are applied physics, obviously astronomy as well. Chemistry, again, not to say there is no connection here. The question mark is, like, I was thinking about, okay, what's, what's going to attract these students who are thinking about, okay, how do I, as a Christian, how do I go into science? How do I apply this? What is the, my motivation for studying chemistry? And that's why I was thinking about the, for this research project and for our majors overall, what's pulling them in that direction. So a couple of Bible verses, Matthew 25, 37 to 40, then the righteous will answer and saying, Lord, when do we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? And when do we see you as a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of my brothers, you did to me. So meeting the needs of people. And through chemistry, we can meet the needs of people. So we can do, I have a colleague who's doing research on drugs that will, for diseases that are ignored by the pharmaceutical companies. So the one she's specifically looking at is African sleeping sickness. But there are others as well that are not profitable for pharmaceutical companies. But what can we do in terms of these incremental steps of organic chemistry to design drugs to help battle some diseases in developing countries that, again, our pharmaceutical companies wouldn't necessarily be looking towards? Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 to 4, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. So again, looking at this from a from an interest of others argument, and how do we meet the needs of others through chemistry? And how do we value others as well? So a lot of students are looking, they're willing to sacrifice their time, they're willing to sacrifice their energies, but there has to be a motivation behind that. Matthew 5, 16, the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works, give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So what are good works that a chemistry major can do? What good is my brothers if someone says he has faith but does not have works? So again, James 2, verses 14 to 17, can that faith save him if a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself does not have works, it's dead. So his faith works. So they're looking, again, for ways of applying their faith. And the last one actually came up this morning in the math talk in terms of power. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. So these students are, they have education, they have abilities, they have training in a laboratory, they have ability that they can apply, and giving them opportunities to think about that. Well, what can they do with their chemistry education in order to apply that, that power they have gained, which is education, right? Education is power. So those technical abilities as well, how can they apply that to others? So brings us to what the DPAL does. So DPAL with this project, Notre Dame has developed over the years different methods based on published United States Pharmacopeia or British Pharmacopeia HPLC procedures. So every university that does this is expected to have a high-performance liquid chromatograph, and we have one at CBU. Had not been used heavily. It's actually bought by an environmental science program in 2010, 2011, they got a grant. They weren't using it much, so I kind of just, I can use it. So I took it. It was actually physically located in the same location, but in terms of using it, I figured, well, that's prime real estate for these students to use this. So every university's instrument is different. Some are very much older, more of an isocratic instrument. They don't have maybe a heated column. This is a research level instrument. Again, it's not brand new. It's about 10 years old, but it has all the capabilities to run gradients, to run various different mobile phases together with a heated column, different detectors we could use on it. And what Notre Dame has is, again, they have about 30 different methods for different active pharmaceutical ingredients. And what we chose to do was focus on one that we could do pretty readily, which was acetaminophen. So we went through their published procedures that they provide, an entire manual for doing this. And I'm not going to get through all the details of the science behind this, but they give us different instrument parameters, what the mobile phase should be, isocratic, so one mobile phase running the entire time, or running a gradient where you're mixing. Is there a buffer that you have to prepare? So is there certain pH requirements for the drug? They give standard preparation procedures for this where it is traceable standards. So they give sources where we can go out and buy from usually from Sigma, the different substances. So again, we did acetaminophen or paracetamol, and then moved into ciprofloxacin this last year, an antibiotic. So acetaminophen is a common pain reliever. So nothing is too out there, but it still gives the students an experience in terms of developing procedures for analyzing this. So standard procedures, sample preparation. So what are the procedures they would go through? They suggested for us just go buy some acetaminophen to begin with. And then they sent us some samples that were already analyzed by somebody else. And we analyzed them and checked our data against the other data. And then they sent us unknown samples from Kenya that had not been analyzed. And then we reported back to them on the results we got from this. Even things like column washing and storage and sample storage, they give procedures on this. So the data is valid. So we're making sure we get methods that are valid. And for the system suitability, they give a whole series of procedures. So my first year or so, the students just went through and they went through this instrument that had not been used heavily and made sure that it was up to standard for what Notre Dame expected. So looking at the normal peak shapes, looking at things like linearity of our results, the accuracy and range, while running different quality control samples and seeing how far could we measure over the range of concentrations that they wanted us to, the precision, limit of detection and lower limit of quantitation. So these are all things I cover in my analytical class, but I don't have experiments where the students go through and do all this. So this is an experience where the students can apply all these things. We're doing a quantitative analysis and then applying to real-world samples. And they even have procedures for spike recovery. So you take a sample of acetaminophen from the store, you add a known amount to it and seeing, can you get that back out again? Can you calculate out how much of the spike you added, how much was in the sample? And then even things like degradation. So heating up the sample and then looking at how much acetaminophen is in that. So this is, again, all the science behind this, I'm not gonna go through all that. And then how the instrument is running. So this is some videos the students made as they were running it, looking at, actually gonna turn the volume off, oops. So we'll just let that run there. So looking at control charts, quality checks after every 5 samples, replicate samples, so all these things you would do in a contract laboratory, what the students are doing, and then the results they get. So basically the preparation the students are getting here is what they would do in a quality control laboratory. So is it traditional undergraduate research? Maybe not, but it gives students that experience that they'll actually be able to go out and apply in industry. Another verse here from Proverbs, the false balance is an abomination of the Lord, just weight is his delight. So making sure that what we're reporting is consistent with, what it really is. And then finally, for the motivation of the students, whatever you do, do it heartily to the Lord, not to men. Knowing that the Lord, you will receive the reward of inheritance for you serve the Lord Christ. So thinking about whatever they're doing as an act of worship for those who are Christians. And some students are Christians as they are taking on this project. Others are not. And it's open to all the different students. And probably one of the most beneficial parts of this is just being able to troubleshoot. Because sometimes whenever students are doing just a laboratory it's all set up, it should work. Well, in this case, it didn't. And they had to do a lot of things. So we had an older column where they had peak trailing, and we had to go through different procedures to try to figure out, why are we getting these bad peaks? So some of the first peaks that were running, that should be one compound, not three. So we're getting some things there. So we had to replace the column. Obviously, with an HPLC, it's a liquid being pumped through at high pressure. So they have leaks they're dealing with. One of my students, she actually works for Pfizer now in Chicago. And she rebuilt the pump on the instrument. She determined, we're probably getting a leak there. So she ordered parts, rebuilt the pump. She got an offer right after graduation. She applied for a lower level job with Pfizer, had a headhunter worked with her and had her go into a higher level. And then she actually is working I think it's a chemometrics division where they actually go on and they validate other HPLCs. So that's right after undergrad. Another student who dealt with software issues and programming of the instrument, and he's working for a company as well, working on HPLC. So some of the benefits to the students, real-world analytical experience, hands-on experience with some of this instrumentation that maybe they don't get to touch as much in their courses. Big thing is a research project. They feel like they're making a difference in the lives of others, which, again, something our students are seeking. Collaborative work. So all my students, they work together in groups of 2 to 4 students. So it's never just one student working alone. And then the direct experience with the experience that's going to lead to job offers or to graduate school. None of the students went to Western University to a master's in pharmaceutical research. So that's it. So any questions you have?
I'm going to leave your hand up.
You had
the first question, I think.
Then... All of a sudden,
right?
Okay, so I take a number of medications.
Yeah.
They come from everywhere in the world, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes the next time I feel it, it came from a different part of the world. How closely are our medications being monitored?
Anything sold in the United States, I think, is being tested. You know, obviously every pill can't be, but they're testing samples as they're importing them from the manufacturers in other countries. Because a lot of our meds are made in India, they're made in other countries, and then they have to be tested once they get to the United States. So I'm not sure exactly what their protocol is for testing every batch that comes in, but knowing what, you know, the way our regulatory agencies are, I'm sure that they're not selling something here that you know, that batch is being imported isn't being tested in some way. And then, you know, the drugs that we even tested, found most of them that were even in these other countries. I mean, they're pretty narrow in terms of where they are, where they're supposed to be. So we had one fail in that first set, but then we realized that our calibration curve was off. We reran it and it came up within the accepted range, plus or minus 10%. So these are 500 milligram samples, so 450 to 550 milligrams is what we're looking for. Most of them are going to be slightly under. But even these sold in other countries, the ones we looked at, were not suspect at this point. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I teach chemical instrumentation at my school,
yeah.
And at the end I have a group project where they do things like this, so I am totally fascinated by what you're doing here. So I'd like to ask you some questions. How much time are these students spending? You take a full semester course to do this?
So this is a research project. So these students, for the most part, are working 1 to 3 afternoons a week throughout the semester. I haven't done it over the summer in like a 10-week or 8-week research intensive time. So this is during the semester. And most of them, it depends on where they come in. I usually try to have one student who's got to continue on from before. So most of the students are doing it over several semesters. And I try to keep somebody on who's done it before to train the other students to keep that knowledge base going.
I'd like to ask more questions, but I'll hold it to give someone else a chance.
There's one question back here, and then Dave and Ron.
I have one question, Dr. Kirkhill.
Yeah.
You speak of an opportunity to integrate faith in for students who are being prepared for research. Can you speak of how you can integrate faith for those who choose the teaching route in ministry?
We have about one or two students a year who graduate in chemistry major, want to go into teaching. Those students, I think they view it as they're going into teaching right now, and this is one of my challenges this coming year. We don't have a really good course for our chemistry majors in terms of like a senior seminar where they're really looking at their faith and science and thinking about that from a conceptual point of view. Something we want to work on and develop that for our chemistry majors. We have a research seminar course where they look at research, but I think especially for someone who wants to go into teaching, having more of a framework like that. So yeah, we're not doing a great job of that right now. We want to do a better job going forward.
And the reason I ask that is because I have a chemistry degree and I went into teaching myself. So my challenge is, how do I find ways to integrate faith into whatever I'm teaching my students?
Yeah.
And show them the beautiful creation, you know, through learning about chemistry.
Right.
So it would be a good opportunity for future teachers in chemistry to get faith eclipsed, especially if they're graduating from college.
Yeah, and any Christian college too. I think, and that's one of my points there with biology versus physics or environmental science. I mean, chemistry, it's a little bit harder to see those direct connections. One more.
Dave? Not that you guys should both talk to Steve about some of those topics, but are there pharmaceutical compounds that you would balk at using in this analysis? Like acetaminophen, cipro, those are pretty, you know,
pretty
compound, not like a big deal. Like students wouldn't, getting on their hands wouldn't be that big a deal.
Exactly.
Are there any that you would walk at using?
Yeah, they actually have, out of the 30 or so they have, there are some that are anti-cancer that only master students are allowed to work with because of that, yeah. Right? Because, yeah, you get CMF on your hands, it doesn't really matter. Cipro, it's not going to hurt you, but there are concerns with some of the cancer-related drugs. And that's why they restrict that, so, yeah.
I was curious if you generally find that whatever is the content that was promoted, if you think that
We're slow on this, and we've only had a couple batches of samples, and the stuff we've been given, it has matched up. So basically what Notre Dame does is they send us out to these undergrads, and they realize, okay, these are undergrad students, their methods may not be exactly aligned. So what they do is anything that comes back and fails, then they run it themselves. So they do a second backup check. So this is kind of like a scanning where I'm just getting through and seeing if it is within the range, if it's outside. And that's why the one I sent, originally I had a student working on it. I sent them in, and then I didn't look at her data as closely as I should have, and I realized that their calibration curve, the sample she ran, was outside the calibration curve, and that's why it failed. So we ran a different calibration curve, and then it matched up. So yeah, so they look over what it is, and the other thing too is it's not to try to get people in trouble. That's why they partner with the governments. They partner with these countries. It's not just like they're going and sneaking in somewhere and buying it. The regulatory agencies in these countries know that they're doing this, and they partner with them more for educating them and not trying to, get somebody in trouble. And sometimes it's just, it's mislabeling. Sometimes it is a matter of just lower than what they're, stated. But they have had sometimes where it's been, things have been sold as a drug, and it's just chalk, right? And they that as an example where there are absolutely fraudulent drugs out there being sold in certain places, and that's where you want to know that, right? So you're taking it. Yeah.
All right. Well, we have Carl wants to switch over. We can take one sort of crossover question. But anyone needs to switch to the session, should feel free to
use it. Yeah. In your analysis, you also look at the impact psycho drugs have on health and lives of people.
Yeah, we're not doing that level for what my students are doing. We're doing more just the straight analysis. But that is a factor as well. What do the drugs do? But we're just doing the straight analysis.
All right. Thank you. Let's thank Tom.